Welcome, everyone, to the A-Bomb Energy Podcast. My name is Brandon, and in this podcast, we talk about everything automotive. And most of you guys know I'm still a Special Operations Combat Medic. And so from time to time, like this podcast, we're going to be talking about things that have to do with mindset, life, and preparing for the future. Because you have to understand that life is a special operation. And my skill set, the things that I've learned and developed and put into practice over these years, has really helped me create a set of guidelines for myself that has propelled me in life that I can't, it's indescribable almost at this point, at where I was pre-special operations and post-special operations. And I'm not saying you need to go join special operations to go be, you know, to go learn these things. There's things that I can teach you that will help. Now, the biggest thing that I want you guys to understand for 2025 is this needs to be, everyone says this every year, but this really needs to be the year of improvement. And I say this for a couple reasons. One, look at the economic situation of the world, not just America, not just the West, but of the world. If we look at the situation like with VW and all the other legacy automakers out there right now, their situation is dire. It is not good for them, especially Volkswagen. Volkswagen, I've talked about it in the last podcast, and Volkswagen is going to be the subject for the next mini documentary that we make. But Volkswagen is one of the largest automakers in the world, one of the largest, and they are being brought right now to their heels. And I know I touched on it last podcast, but I actually have serious concerns for Volkswagen. And I'm not one of these guys. If you look at all these other YouTube channels, and they're great channels, by the way, but you'll see these videos pop up from time to time where it's like, the automotive industry is crashing. It's been crashing for like ever since YouTube has existed at this point. Everyone is always making, oh, it's the year of the crash. The truck crash is happening. The sedan crash, the SUV, everything's crashing. But to a certain degree, they are correct to a certain degree. Now, if we study history and we look at things like the great financial crash of the GFC of 2008, if you're young enough and you don't remember what happened in 2008, that's basically when the bottom fell out of everything. Housing market crash, the automotive industry was bailed out, GM, Chrysler, Ford. Ford got bailed out. Don't let anyone tell you that Ford didn't get bailed out. I made a video on it. They took tons and tons of money from the U.S. government. They took billions of dollars in TARP funds. The whole idea is they took money from the U.S. government as a loan, an unfair loan. Same thing with GM and Chrysler. And Chrysler has actually been bailed out a few times. But if we look at the automotive industry, they crashed in 2008 and they were bailed out in 2009. And what I want you to take away from that is if you look at the housing market and the automotive industry, how those two correlate is for a couple reasons. One, the house you buy is going to be one of the most expensive things that you buy. It's going to be your biggest purchase of your life for most people. The second most expensive thing that they're going to buy is a car, usually in the form of a loan. Now, when those things crash, usually the rest of the economy starts crashing, and we're starting to see kind of a domino effect occur. Volkswagen's starting to crash. Ford is losing billions of dollars right now with their electric vehicle stuff that they have going on, all these unfair loans they're taking from DOE and TARP, or not TARP, but DOE and other entities in the form of subsidies and all this stuff. There's a lot of weird stuff going on with Ford. They have their Skunk Works program, which Jim Farley is literally betting the entire company of Ford on their Skunk Works program, which is their program that they're using to develop to combat the EV crisis that's pretty much coming to a head at this point. And General Motors, same thing. Billions of dollars being lost with General Motors. Their Chevy Cruze program, their autonomous vehicle program that they had, I mean, to be honest with you, it's fucked. They've sold it. At this point, they've stopped funding it. All those GM Cruze vehicles that they have coming in, I think they're going to repurpose them somehow. They're going to study them, use them for other technology that GM is working on. I know GM at this point is working on flying cars, and I'm not even kidding. I think they call it UAWs. I can't remember what it stands for, aerial something. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, but they're working on flying cars now. And so instead of focusing efforts on things that actually matter, maybe increasing the lifespan of your vehicle, increasing the engineering capabilities of your engineers, increasing the reliability, durability of your vehicles, making a better product, putting more time and effort into design and engineering, you're now creating flying cars. So this goes to show you the corporatocracy or the corporate structure of a lot of these automotive companies. And really, I mean, housing industry too, as well, is tied in with this. But it goes to show you just how out of touch they are with reality. People can barely buy a base model car that's like 20 grand, 22, 23 grand. They can barely afford that. And these companies out there right now are working on fucking flying cars. This just goes to show you how out of touch they are. Now, the reason I say this is because back in 2008, same thing started happening. Ford, GM, Chrysler, the big three, were working on things that wasn't necessarily what the customer wanted. And we're starting to see that trend hit really hard now. We see it with electric vehicles. The trend is clearly there. They're not selling very well. And again, I'm not anti-EV, but I'm not really pro-EV. I'm kind of like, I see the benefits, but why don't we let the market dictate how it goes? Because then that'll drive innovation, engineering, and all that crap that, you know, goes into making a quality product. But we saw that in 08. They were making stuff that people didn't want, and we're seeing it now. People don't necessarily want a lot of the stuff that's being put out right now, whether it's auto start stop, which is a program mandated by the government, because car companies at this point, if for people that don't know, if they don't get a certain miles per gallon with their vehicle, what ends up happening is they start getting hit with all these fees. So then what they have to do is they have to kind of re-engineer things, rework things to fit into this specific mold that's been placed for them to avoid these fees, or at least lessen the fees. And 99.99% of the time, it's to lessen the fees. They're going to get hit with some sort of fine or fee from the EPA and the government as a whole. Now, what they did to combat that is put those things like auto start stop, turbocharging, you know, a one cylinder engine at this point, because whenever they do the EPA testing with a turbocharged vehicle, they're not really engaging the turbo. So what that means is, let's say you have, like, for example, I got a 2024 VW Jetta. Bought it for my business to run deliveries for my energy drink company. And with that vehicle, it has a 1.5 liter turbo. Whenever they do the testing for that, what happens is they're really sensitive with how they drive it. They're not doing any type of spirited driving. They're not doing normal type driving. They're doing just enough to not really engage the turbo, which once you engage that turbo, your fuel economy goes down. And so the reason they do that is to avoid those fees. And so what ends up happening is that cost now is then passed off onto you, the consumer, because now the turbo is going to break. That's a very expensive job to repair, especially depending on where the turbo is placed on the motor and the design of the motor. That's really going to start ramping up the costs. You're going to have to change your oil more frequently because the heat and pressure and all that crap inside the motor is now really amplified because of the turbocharger. And then it's just going to wear the engine out faster. So now your vehicle is not going to last as longer. So all these things that they're doing is an economic burden on the consumer. And so this is why it's really important to always be improving, always learn things. And so what I mean by that is most people will go out there and they'll buy a turbocharged car, or they'll buy something like, like an electric vehicle or just something. And they won't necessarily understand what they're getting into. And it's a shame, because what ends up happening is when things start breaking, they're like, why is this breaking? This doesn't make sense. And then they get hit with a massive repair bill that they can probably barely afford. So then, you know, second and third order effects, they put it on their credit card, they gain interest. And now that, you know, $1,000 repair that they got is now $1,500 in repairs because of the interest accrued on their credit card. And so it's a really sad state to see those kinds of things. And so what I really urge people to do is every time you're getting ready to buy a car, research the piss out of it. Understand what you're getting into. Because, like, here's a really good example. When I bought my first car, which was a 2009 Dodge Charger 2.7 liter V6, I still own that car. I bought that car in 2010. Yeah, I went to basic training in 2010, got back from basic training, and like a typical Army private, went out and bought a Dodge Charger. It's just a classic thing that everyone does. I don't know why. I bought it because I thought it looked cool. But what I didn't understand, because I was young, dumb, and full of a certain fluid, I didn't know that the motor that was in that vehicle was a horrible motor. Actually, one of the worst motors that's ever been put out by Chrysler. So much so that class action lawsuits have been just hit on Chrysler so many times for that vehicle because of sludge buildup and all these oil ports getting clogged up, that it's just crazy. So what I later on learned with that vehicle is, hey, I need to change my oil sooner. I need to change all the fluids sooner than what the owner's manual says and what the engineers are recommending. I need to do everything faster and quicker than what they're recommending. And to this day, that car has over 200,000 miles on it. I don't think a 2.7 Charger or 2.7 V6 vehicle from Chrysler has ever received or achieved that level of miles. I don't think it's happened, because I've studied that vehicle and it's really important to always be learning. And I fear for the future that we're heading into right now. I do think the future's bright. Don't get me wrong. I am going to talk a little doomy and gloomy here, but I do think the future is bright because more people are aware, because this is the best time to be alive. We have the ability to get answers almost instantaneously by just a cell phone. That is insane. I mean, I know a guy, he literally runs his entire business off of his phone. He sells the product off his phone because he has the Square, you know, card reader thing that you can use with the Shopify store. He runs all his product management off of his phone. He does everything banking on his phone. He does all of it. It's incredible. And so this is a really good time to be alive. And it's also kind of a bad time, too, because people that aren't aware, they're not self-aware, they're not cognizant of their surroundings and kind of understanding, like, okay, I see this trend happening, what does that mean? And when you study history and you study things like the automotive history of, you know, like Chrysler getting bailed out, I think in the late 70s, the GFC that happened in 2008, you start looking at trends, you start developing pattern recognition skills. And so then when you start studying these things more and more and more, you then become almost better than everyone else in terms of knowledge and trend recognition, pattern recognition, trend analysis, all these things. You start developing that skill. And the more you put into it, the more you start realizing, like, this is just kind of instantaneous. I'm learning these things, I'm researching these things, and I see this happening now. For example, case in point, EVs. I see this thing happening now. I understand that, hey, forced EV adoption, not market adoption, subsidizing EVs, that then is going to lead to, it is a nothing burger. Nothing is going to really come from it. It is a forced trend. And it's a really interesting thing that you start kind of seeing these things develop. You know, for example, like Dodge at one point, I think it was Dodge, may have been Ford, but I think it was Dodge, where they had four-wheel steering in their vehicles. And they thought this was going to be revolutionary, dude. They thought it was going to be awesome. What ends up happening? Things start breaking. Of course, you just complicated the drive system of a vehicle tenfold. And they later abandon it because they're like, okay, this is stupid. Same thing with Chevy Cruze, the autonomous vehicle platforms. They realized, okay, this is costing billions of dollars. It's not working. It's killing people. It's hitting people on the road. Okay, this is stupid. We need to stop doing this. And it's really interesting whenever as you get older, you'll get really good at this. But when you see situations taking place from the outside and you're not directly involved with that situation, what ends up happening, and this is really interesting, but what ends up happening is you develop a different perspective than the person that's involved with it personally, financially, you know, whatever reason they're involved with you, it's the outsider perspective. And it's absolutely awesome whenever you start doing that and you're able to identify these things. And so that's why you see guys like, I know a lot of people hate Scotty Kilmer. I don't know why. I think he's a great dude. Scotty Kilmer is probably one of the best automotive YouTube channels out there. He gives a lot of really good advice. It's really good practical advice on your car purchases, how to repair the car, how to identify problems with your car, how to diagnose all these things. Like, this is great. I don't understand why anyone hates him. Is it because he hates EVs? Well, you know, maybe ask the question, Why does he hate EVs? Why does he think it's stupid? Well, I don't know. The dude's like a 400 years old. He's seen the trends constantly happening in the automotive industry. He's a little bit more astute. Now, you can disagree with people like that, and you should, especially if your little spidey senses start tingling. And you're like, I don't really know if that sounds right. Definitely disagree with those kind of people. You want to be your own person, but you also don't want to be someone that just disregards someone that's older. You know, the whole respect your elders thing is, it is a reality. Now, kind of walking this thing back here. Special skills need to be developed by everyone. You need to figure out what sets you apart as an individual, because the economic times, and the whole reason for this big ass rant here, the economic times, I think, are really unpredictable right now, because the automotive industry is, in a nutshell, it is kind of cracking. I wouldn't say it's crashing, but in certain ways, it's cracking and leading to a crash. And the reason I say you need to find skills that set you apart, you need to adopt special skills, you need to learn things, you need to understand your mind, your body, how it works, how it functions, what gets you motivated, what gets you out of bed in the morning, really. You need to figure these things out about yourself. And it took me, oh man, I didn't figure it out till I was about 25, 26. So that was like 6 years ago, give or take. I started to figure these things out. And the economic times are very uncertain. And when you can figure these things out, what makes you tick? What gets you going? You're going to be able to capitalize on that, weaponize it, and essentially feed yourself a lot easier. And it's a really critical thing to do. And, you know, I being a special operations medic and just being in special operations, there's this thing called the RSOF core attributes, the Army Special Operations Forces core attributes. And they're integrity, courage, perseverance, personal responsibility, adaptability, professionalism, team player, and capability. You can Google those things and you can get like a little blurb on them. But for me, one of the most critical in those core attributes, and these core attributes are something I truly believe. You know, you look at like the Army core values, like the standard conventional force core values. Those are great. All right. Yeah, whatever. The special operations one are more relatable and they mean way more to me than they do than the standard Army core values. And, you know, I'm not like some guy who's like, oh, I love the Army. There's a reason I'm getting out this year, guys. Just so you guys know, there's a reason I'm getting out. Number one, I'm starting an energy drink business, going to production this month. So you can buy the product now if you want. You can pre-order it. We don't have a lot of pre-order slots left, but you can pre-order it if you want. We go into production this month and it's going to be awesome. But there's a reason I'm doing that. But there's a lot of really awesome things I learned being in special operations that really, it was the defining moment of my life, essentially. And, you know, that core attribute of personal responsibility is so important to me because it's about being a self-motivator, a self-starter, being able to anticipate certain situations that could happen, you know, reading the tea leaves, which is why I'm very big on studying the past, studying history, because, you know, they always say history repeats itself. Well, Mark Twain said history doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes, and he's totally correct on that. Certain things start to build up and they start to rhyme with the past, and that looking at the past will allow you to predict that future and the outcome of that, and you can then use that potential outcome and position yourself to be out on top of that potential outcome. You know, there's a reason I'm starting the beverage industry. Here's an example. Okay, I have a lot of reasons I'm starting the beverage company, but one of the really good reasons I'm starting it is during the Great Depression, people, whenever they were just dirt poor, just they had nothing, you know, they're digging through trash cans, waiting in bread lines, all that crap. Horrible time to be alive. It taught people a lot of things, by the way, like how to take care of their equipment that they have, their cars, for example. That's why people that lived during the Great Depression or had parents that lived during the Great Depression, they're some of the best car owners out there because their parents instilled in them of take care of your shit and your shit will take care of you. You know, that's a thing that we have in the Army. You're always cleaning your weapon. Make sure that thing is good to go. You know, me as a medic, you know, I got two weapons, actually, pistol and a rifle, sometimes more. And I'm always cleaning my weapon, making sure it's good to go. Mags are loaded. I'm always checking my aid bag, making sure that, hey, Do I have my bleed kit? Do I have my Krite kit? Do I have everything I need? And I visualize everything in my head as I'm going through my aid bag. I could go through my aid bag right now blind, literally blind. And I could do probably better treatments than most people with eyesight because I know that equipment and I know the human body so well that I can find your veins if I need to get IV access. And I can just do it by touch at this point. It's critical. So getting back to personal responsibility, you need to take accountability for your actions. And the best thing that I did was I realized the only way I can get better, the only way that things are going to get better for me is if I realize the only one that is responsible for my failures is me. And once I adopted that mentality, I was like, God dang, dude, I wasted like 20 something years of my life because I spent so much time blaming everyone else. Oh, I'm not successful because of this person. Oh, the system is screwing me, blah, blah, blah. Take that personal accountability and personal responsibility. I'm telling you, your life will change. And it's been lost in our society. This victim culture, this idea that, you know, oh, the system's got me. Look, bro, the system's got everyone. You just need to figure out a way to fight through it and power through it. And so it's something that I learned, especially in SOCOM, Special Operations Combat Medic course. When I was going through SOCOM, I was, I don't know, 20, 25, 26 in that range. Again, it was the most pivotal moment of my life. But I was going through SOCOM, and SOCOM is probably, it actually is the hardest course in the military. It has the, out of all branches, Navy, Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, Space Legacy Force, whatever else is out there now, Coast Guard. It is the hardest course. It has the highest failure rate out of any course. I think in my class, we had 30-ish percent people make it to the end. Make it to the end, which is crazy. I mean, you have some of the smartest people, the toughest people going through that course, and it's just not enough. Some of it, I think, is the fact that some people just don't understand that if you put in the work, you put in the time, and you truly want something, the universe is an amazing thing and it will give it to you. If you put in the work and the time and you really want this, you really want those things, it will reward you. You know, there was a time when I was in SOCOM, and there was, I think most people, let me kind of back this up here. Most people know what they need to do. I truly believe that. I think there's that inner part of you, whether it's your gut or the little man that lives inside you and then, you know, pokes your ear at night and wakes you up. Most people know what they need to do. Some people just don't know how. They don't know the first step. And they're kind of just, you know, executing on tasks, thinking they're doing something, and it's really yielding nothing. Or it's yielding minimal results. And so there's things that you can do. One of the things is called the power list. It's 5 critical tasks that you need to do. This is not an idea from me. This is from Andy Frisella. He's a great podcaster, owns First Form Nutrition. I buy a lot of my supplements from him. Great dude. Changed my life with the power list. And it's those 5 critical tasks. And you can't go to bed until those 5 critical tasks are done. And if you go to bed and you're missing one of the critical tasks, you failed for the day. And you got to write it out in a journal, those 5 things you got to get done. It's not a to-do list, but it's 5 critical things you need to get done for the day to win the day. And so I bring this up because when I was going through SOCOM, and you know, I'd show up to work at about 6 in the morning, and this was about every day, including weekends, and it was a 10-month course. I think it took me a year to get through it because I recycled one phase because I failed a phase, and then which, you know, it's pretty standard. Most people fail one phase or they recycle a phase at some point during the course. It's pretty normal. Not trying to justify it, but it's pretty normal. Trauma 2 was the one I recycled, by the way. So if you know anything about SOCOM, Trauma 2 was that'll change you in a lot of ways. I can't go into details, you know, NDAs and all that crap. But Trauma 2, you know, I recycled that. And what would have really helped me in SOCOM was if I had the power list. Because every day I'd show up to work, 06, I'd get home about 4 or 5, and then I would study till about 11 o'clock at night, till about midnight. because you're going through all these different phases. You're going through clinical medicine, you're going through pharmacology, which has to do with like pharmacokinetics, how drugs interact with other drugs. You're learning trauma medicine, you're learning anatomy and physiology, you're working on cadavers, you're doing all sorts of stuff. And I mean, it's tough, man. It is a tough freaking course. That course was so tough. There's a picture of me like a couple weeks before I started the course, and there's a picture of me when I finished the course. I literally look like I aged like 10 years. It is insane. I lost hair, got gray hairs from that course, and the gray hairs are now like gone, which is kind of weird. I guess my body was like, get out of here, dude. I'm in charge. We don't want to look older. But it's kind of weird because how demanding that course was. And part of the demand was placed on myself because I wanted to pass that course so bad. I wanted it more than anything. And if I would have done something like the power list, you know, every night, every night before the next day, hey, here's my critical tasks. Here's my critical tasks that I knew that I need to do for the next day to win that day. You know, maybe do it the morning of if you have to. You know, sometimes I do it the morning of to kind of help plan my day because my days are so unpredictable now. But if I would have had that, I probably wouldn't have failed Trauma 2 and I wouldn't have recycled, and it wouldn't have taken me a year to get through that course. It would have taken me 10 months. And it's a critical thing to adopt. I highly suggest it because it's going to help you realize like, hey, man, I'm actually really inefficient with my time, and I'm wasting days. And as you get older, you know, I'm in my 30s. As you get older, you kind of start to realize like, man, there's not a lot of time. There is not a lot of time. And like my last deployment I was on, we were in a couple sketchy situations. I'll put it that way. A couple, nothing insane. One situation was kind of weird. I was by myself actually on our FOB, and you know, there was a threat of potentially, you know, the guys that are refueling our generators at night, there might be an explosive attached to it, and you know, they're going to get it close to a tent and detonate. And I remember one time it was like 9 o'clock at night. I was going for a night workout, because when you're deployed and you're not doing anything, you eat and work out like a prisoner. And I was like 9 o'clock at night, and I'm walking to the gym, and I see this fuel truck come in, and I'm like, oh man, damn it. it's right on my path to the gym. And I was like, oh goodness. And it stops. It starts fueling up at a generator. I see a dude get out. He's like crawling around underneath the truck, which I've seen these trucks everywhere on the FOB. I've never seen someone crawling around underneath. And I was like, uh-oh, this is weird. So I went up to him. I was like, hey man, you good? And I said it to him in French, and because this was in Africa, and I said it to him in French, and he looked up at me like, oh, who is this guy? And he's like, he transitioned to English, and he's like, yes, sir, I'm good. Everything's fine. And he immediately got out from under that truck and went back to fueling the generator. I don't know if anything weird was going on, but at that moment in time, I wouldn't say it flashed before me, but I thought about a couple things that are very near and dear to me. And I was like, man, this would really suck to die here this way and it'd be for nothing. And it'd be in a coward way too, an explosion. Not, you know, you don't want to get in a gunfight with me because you know you'll lose, but you're going to blow me up. All right, coward. And so like after that moment, like, man, time has always been the most precious resource to me, but it became even more precious at that point because I've realized there's so much more that I'm capable of. There's so much more that I need to be doing. And I want to translate that to you guys because I don't want you to be caught with your pants down in 2025, 2026, in 2027, in 2028, you know, whatever. I don't want you to ever be caught with your pants down. It sucks. You know, we are so capable of executing and achieving what we want, but sometimes we just don't know how to do it. And so some of the resources that I do to help me get these things done, reading physical books, not an ebook. I'm nothing against ebooks, but I think physical books are, it's more personal. When you turn that page, it's more personal. And when I mean reading books, I mean active reading. There's a, I don't know if this is an actual thing, but like, I learned this in special operations, especially in the medic course. Whenever I was trying to learn a concept in the most driest textbook on the planet that was written by like an 80-year-old, you know, dweeb that has never done anything difficult in his life except study the, you know, anatomy and physiology of a body, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just kind of joking there, but it's written in a very dry way. And so what I would do is I would take notes while I'm reading, find an interesting concept. I take notes. Take notes in your book. Like I'm right now, I'm reading a book on a World War II general and I'm taking notes inside of the book. I use the front page. You know, in the first few pages of a book, how they're usually blank or there's like maybe one or two words on it or something like that. I use those pages to take notes. I put a page number and then I underline and I write what that page number is about. And then on that page that I wrote the page number on, I underline the key concept that I really liked. And this book that I'm reading right now was talking about how a dude, this general, during his start of his military career, which I'm using this as to translate into business, because everything I do is a military operation in my mind. I'm using those concepts that he practiced and he applied in combat and in training, and I'm applying that to business. And I underline those things like, boom, boom. Hey, this is great. Hey, this is how he executed that task. And it helps you become a better person. It helps you become more of a lethal person, both in business, life. You know, if you're going to join the military, you know, whatever. It's great. It's absolutely great. You know, those active reading, take notes. If you got to get a book, I use a composition notebook for stuff whenever I run out of pages or if I know I'm going to be taking a ton of notes on this book, I use a composition notebook. Boom. Perfect. The other thing that you can do, study the past. Study the past is always critical. You know, I've talked about it already in the beginning of this podcast. Don't think I need to hit on it more, but you need to study it, especially because that GFC crash that happened in 08, look at what happened there. You know, look at organic trends that occurred, you know, like in the early 2000s, like for example, hybrids. That's an organic trend. Hybrids are here to stay. And in fact, they're just going to grow at this point. EVs are not an organic trend. It is a forced trend that is happening in society, and it's not going to grow. It's not going to be sustainable, number one. It's also just not going to grow. And the other thing that you need to do, be self-reliant. You know, to the best of your ability. We all need people to help us get through life, but being as self-reliant as possible, putting yourself in situations that forces self-reliancy. I do this almost on the daily. One of the things you can do, working out, that's an obvious one, but doing things like fixing your own car. If there's a problem, I used to love fixing my car. I hate it now. I absolutely hate working on my cars now. I can do just about anything on a car now at this point, except maybe like rebuild a transmission. But I got to that level because I was so broke and I was so poor that I had to learn how to fix my own car. Now I'm at the point where it's like, okay, if there's this problem going on with the car, it's more than likely this issue. Run my diagnostics. Yep, it's this issue, and then I can fix it. And it's an incredible skill to learn. And, you know, I think cars at some point are going to get back to being a little bit more simple on the engineering side to where people can then go back to working on their own cars. I think EVs, you can work on your own EV. There's not really a ton you can do. Maybe change the brakes, change the coolant. You're dropping the battery, man. I'm good. I don't even want to play that game. I've seen these things catch on fire. Not my style, bro. Not my style. I mean, if I ever got an EV, that thing would be parked outside and I'd have an outdoor level 2 charger. That's how I would do it. I wouldn't put that thing in a garage. There's hell no. Hell no. Not happening. So that's the podcast. I want you guys to take 2025, grab it by the balls, squeeze them. Make them things explode and let them know that you're in charge. So if you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can hit me up on Facebook, Instagram. You can hit me up on my abomenergy.com. That's my business website. My email's at the bottom. You can always hit me up there. You can hit me up on YouTube. Other than that, I'm out of here. Thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate it.